Well, thank you so much, Jennifer and Rucha, for really highlighting the importance of engaging the community. And obviously, it looks like, you know, there's a lot of indication that you're going to have success for future programs. But I do have questions, and I'll raise them now, but they're actually going to be for all the speakers that that present today. But, you know, if you could, at the end of the session, maybe describe a little bit, you know, what do you think, you know, working with the community, what were the strengths or what were the positive aspects of the intervention that you thought contributed to the success of it? And also, you know, what are you doing? I think you spoke a little bit about it, but what efforts is NYU and your organization doing to sustain the program so that it can be carried through even without grant funding from NIH? So if you could comment on that later. So now let's move to the Filipino immigrant community in New York City as well. Today we have Radora Ursua, who is the former project director of Project Aspire, which is at the NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health. Unfortunately, Radora is not with us in New York City anymore. She's a free agent. She's on the West Coast. So, you know, if anyone needs is looking for anyone She's very engaged in the community. She has a long history working with the Filipino immigrant community in New York City, and I'm hoping she's going to take her legacy, you know, to San Francisco. But anyway, she'll be presenting on hypertension among Filipino Americans through Project Aspire, community health worker intervention.
Thank you, Amy, and thank you everyone for being here this morning. So, as Amy said, I'll be speaking about our experience implementing it's also a community-based participatory research project in the Filipino community, very similar to the RISE project, using a community health worker intervention. But for us, we're addressing hypertension in the Filipino community. As far as disclosures, I have no relationships to disclose, and I'll be sharing a lot of our lessons learned from this 8-year program that we've had. These are the two partners that were the main partners implementing Project Aspire. Jennifer spoke about the NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health, but the community partner in this project is Kalisugan Coalition, which is a Filipino community-based organization, actually the only one in New York that was dedicated to addressing the health needs of the Filipino community there through these various ways, like network development, education, research, community action, and advocacy. And Project Aspire was funded by the NIMHD Community-Based Participatory Research Initiative in Reducing and Eliminating Health Disparities. We had a 3-year planning grant where we did something similar to Project RISE, where we were able to pilot the project. It was a coalition of community stakeholders that really guided the process, and that led to a 5-year implementation grant where we were able to take it to scale. And we'll talk a little bit about sustainability in a little bit. But to give you a snapshot of who Filipino Americans are in the New York community, 78,000 according to the 2010 census. In the New York community, majority living in Queens, majority being foreign-born, and many studies have shown that Filipinos have a very high hypertension burden compared to whites and other Asian Americans and Native Hawaiian and other Pacific Islanders. Jennifer spoke about community health workers, who they are, but yeah, they're very critical players in the healthcare workforce. But what's so unique about them is that they have these close relationships with the community. You know, when we recruit community health workers, oftentimes folks would say, "Oh, do they need a health background?" And in our case, you know, we really looked at their attributes more. You know, how closely were they tied to community groups? Did they know how to reach a lot of the hard-to-reach communities? And just these attributes of being empathetic and having the ability to really connect to community members who tend to fall through the cracks of the healthcare system. And so they play these variety of roles, whether it's, you know, the outreach and being a liaison between community groups and the healthcare system, you know, providing that case management and care coordination and doing these home visits and, you know, really serving as these health coaches and coaching community members to lead healthy lifestyles and helping them navigate the complex healthcare system. And then a lot of community health workers just have this very, very key role in participatory research. So I'll be speaking specifically about the Asian American Partnerships in Research and Empowerment, which is what Project Aspire stands for. And the intervention itself it was a 4-month intervention. We did use a randomized controlled trial design as well. And our treatment group had 4 educational sessions, 4 follow-up visits, and 8 follow-up phone calls, whereas the control group really just got this one initial educational session about risk factors of hypertension and a referral to a clinician and other health resources. As far as the comparison of characteristics between the treatment and control groups, they were very similar. Mean age was 54 and 55 for each group. And as far as insurance status, I mean, it was very high. It was 68% in the treatment group and 73% in the control group. So this population did not have much access to the healthcare system. And so they were very similar as far as different characteristics. And when we initially, during our needs assessment phase, you know, we did some qualitative assessments as well and focus groups to look at what were the barriers that these community members were facing when it came to healthcare access and what they looked at as factors associated with hypertension. And health affordability was a key issue. A lot of them said that, you know, they just felt like they could not afford health insurance and seeing a doctor. A lot of community members tend to send a lot of their income back home to support their families in the Philippines and, you know, do not prioritize their healthcare because their priority is supporting their families often. And as far as like an example of cultural factors that they would associate with hypertension, you know, a lot of it's related to being an immigrant here. A lot of them are separated from their families back home and would talk about a lot of the stressors that they feel working here solely to support their families and, you know, not having that support system often and taking jobs, for instance, that are different from what they did back home in the Philippines. You know, a lot of them were domestic workers or took a lot of jobs in the service sector, whereas back home they were teachers or, other professionals. And so they would often talk about that stress and when they thought about their hypertension. So as far as methods, the way our community health workers reached the community was through these various methods, whether it was utilizing ethnic media. A lot of the referrals came from participants themselves and different volunteers, and that was actually one of the best ways to recruit folks because they would just draw in people they knew. But then the community health workers also reached community members where they were at, so they would go to apartment buildings that had a lot of Filipino residents because, again, our participants would say, come to my building, there's a lot of Filipinos in my building, feel free to do a health screening there. And then we would partner with various faith-based organizations throughout New York who would let us do health fairs there and different cultural festivals. And then Kalisugan Coalition has an office in this really prime area in New York, in Queens, where there's a lot of Filipino businesses and a high concentration of the community there. So people would also walk into the office. And so as far as results, a key result that we saw between the more intensive and less intensive, or the treatment and control group, was the reduction in blood pressure. There was a significant reduction, a larger reduction in blood pressure in the treatment group, with a 24.3 reduction in systolic and 10.6 in diastolic for the treatment group, and the less intensive group was 7.9 and 2.6 reduction. So, and this was over an 8-month period. We evaluated these changes between baseline, 4 months. 4 months was when the intervention ended, and then at 8 months we did another follow-up to see did they sustain the behaviors that, you know, they were learning about during the intervention. And so actually at the 4-month mark there was some similarities between both groups because, again, the control group did receive one session, but at the 8-month mark we saw that it was a treatment group that was able to sustain those changes more than the control group because, again, the treatment group had more interactions with the community health workers. You know, they were seeing them once a month and getting these regular phone calls from them. Another finding was that, you know, when you looked at the control of blood pressure at the end of the 8-month period, the treatment group exhibited 90% of the treatment group exhibited controlled blood pressure, and the control group, it was about a little over half that showed controlled blood pressure. So we did expect that the control group was going to show changes as well, but again, not as large as the treatment group. And then for medication adherence, we also did see, we used the Hillbone compliance scale, and we did see greater medication adherence at the 8-month mark for the treatment group as well. So those were our primary outcomes, including appointment keeping, too. Both groups demonstrated improved appointment keeping at 8 months, but the change was more significant in the treatment group. And as far as our qualitative assessment, we had one of our co-investigators had interviewed community health workers as well as some of the community health worker trainers and the participants from our pilot study, actually. And they shared these various reasons why they thought the community health worker role impacted them, their improvement in their health outcomes. And they would talk about the fact that, you know, this intervention was very culturally tailored, and you know, the ways that the community health workers relayed the health messages to the community members was done in very novel and creative ways. I didn't mention that this intervention utilized a culturally tailored curriculum that was developed by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute called Healthy Heart, Healthy Families, and our coalition was very engaged in tailoring that to the Filipino community because it was initially done for the African American Latino communities. And so, that curriculum was very critical in relaying those messages on how to eat healthy and how to exercise and different ways of adapting traditional Filipino recipes, for instance. And then the community members also said that they looked at the community health worker's role beyond a health worker. I mean, they really looked at this individual as somebody who was really supportive to them, almost as a friend and as a family member, who really genuinely showed that they were, caring and concerned for their well-being, and that helped them in reaching their health goals. And they also felt that they were very empowered to increase their heart health knowledge. And, you know, one demonstration of them feeling empowered was that they said that they would often share the knowledge that they gained about heart health with their families and their social network. And I don't have a slide about this, but as far as sustainability, as Amy had asked, in our last year of funding, we were able to receive another grant from the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. It was called the Strategic Champions Grant, and they wanted groups who were experienced in implementing that curriculum, the Healthy Heart, Healthy Family curriculum, to train other community health workers on how to use it. So it was great to have that grant for 1 year, where we were then in turn able to train other community health workers serving the Filipino community in San Francisco, again, a large Filipino population there, in San Diego, and in Jersey City. So, and that is being sustained because this is now called the Alliance of Filipino American Community Health Workers, and it's aimed to be this network that is going to allow for a lot of, basically create a learning community among community health workers that are serving the Filipino community, starting with heart health, but now we're going to be expanding to other health issues that our different partners are addressing, like breast cancer and other health issues. And so it's been a nice way for groups, you know, it's not just the group in New York teaching the community health workers in California. It's vice versa. Like, a lot of the California groups have a lot of history in serving the community there, and so they're sharing a lot of their strategies with the New York community health workers. So that's one way of sustaining the community health worker model, and in turn, the community health workers in New York have been training other community partners in New York, such as some of the church-based groups. They have health ministries, for instance, and there's community leaders within these church groups that wanted to learn about how to be a community health worker. So our CHWs have been able to train them on the curriculum and on core competencies of community health workers. So those are different ways of sustaining, again, without grant funding, because these health ministries, they're all about, you know, promoting the health and well-being of their congregants, and and without funding, like, they are able to actually implement that kind of those kind of sessions with their members. And this is just a testimonial of one of our community members, where, you know, shows how the reduction in all her different outcomes, and how she felt like it was really that constant follow-up by her community health worker that helped her, you know, exercise more, at least 30 minutes on a daily basis. And this other participant said that, you know, like, learning how to exercise and gaining that social support helped her reduce her stress and help her get her blood pressure stable. So lessons learned, you know, again, we know there's not very many culturally, linguistically appropriate materials for these types of communities. And we had to do a lot to balance the scientific rigor with what was culturally acceptable in the community. And again, like Richa was saying, like this partnership between academic and community partners was very key in that, to make sure that we were doing things in a way that was acceptable to the community. And then as far, you know, people always ask about challenges. Of course, one challenge was getting more male participants. It was actually 70% women that were in each of the groups, and so you know, we eventually hired a male community health worker to help recruit men, and then as far as folks that we were reaching were in the service sector, but sometimes they were hard to retain because of their long working hours, especially if they were live-in domestic workers, for instance, who were not able to come to the sessions because, you know, they just had no time because they were working such long hours. And, you know, as was mentioned, you know, CHWs really just serve as key bridges and facilitate trust, and they serve as a voice for a lot of the undocumented and underserved immigrants, and they have a key role in building capacity of all kinds of folks, researchers, interns, other coalition members to do CBPR, and definitely leadership capacity building promotes sustainability. And that's it. These are just acknowledgments of my co-authors and community health workers.